All right, welcome everyone to this week's, or this month's, I should say, Zojo Podcast. This is actually Zojo Podcast number 3. I am here with special guest Eric Gibbon from the UK. Ooh, really far away for me. And he is a Zojo developer and also one of the people that runs the Zojo Users Group UK conference. And he's going to talk about all these things, and we'll talk about other random stuff as it occurs during our little chat today. So, Eric, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for inviting me on. How are you?
I'm good. So I figured we'd start by maybe if I could ask you to give a little bit about your background, how you came about using Zojo and stuff like that.
Sure. I'm a developer of long standing. Amongst other roles, I've been programming now for over 30 years. Now, I know what you're going to say. There's no way I look that old, but it's actually true.
It's impossible.
I started off working for Unisys in tech support roles back in the 80s and programming for mainframes. And then I moved to work mainly for financial companies on mainframes using languages that are now either obsolete or where the systems are now politely classed as legacy. I could probably earn a small fortune if I wanted to go back into that world, but I've got no interest in going back there. So I've been freelance since 1997, and I've been using Real Studio and Zojo since around 1998, I believe.
Oh, wow. That's a long time user, right from the beginning.
I started off with Real Basic because I wanted to write shareware for Mac. Does anyone still use the term shareware? You know, I don't typically hear that anymore.
Yeah, you don't hear that.
So I'd learned to program in BASIC at university as well as a number of other languages. And I'd used Visual Basic version 3, I think it was, commercially for a few years. So Real Basic for me was the natural choice at the time. It was quite an interesting time. Mac OS 9 was my target platform at the time. But then they announced the whole Mac OS 10 thing and everything changed. Anyway, my shareware app got a few hundred sales. It was small beer, but it was quite interesting to do. Back then, there was no Mac App Store, and it was quite hard to get your app known around the world. I had a web developer build a website and put the app onto a popular downloading site. And for a while, it went totally nuts. Thousands of people were actually downloading the app, posting absolute nonsense on the forum about it and generally not buying the software. But it was quite interesting to see what happened next. The people that used the software immediately wanted more features and a load of stuff that I didn't want to do, like syncing data with their Palm Pilots. I mean, do you remember Palm Pilots?
Oh, yes, I had Palm Pilots.
I used to love them. So I was cool with the new features, but getting into syncing data with Palm Pilots was a step too far for me, really. But after a while, the amount of time that I spent supporting the software was way more effort than it was worth, and I could no longer support it. There were also some other apps that did the same thing as my app, and to be perfectly honest, they were better than mine. But it was all good experience. I wish it had sold better, but that's how it goes sometimes. So that's how I really started off with Zojo back in Real Basic days. These days, I now develop cross-platform business databases for Mac, PC, and the web using Zojo. I've got a small number of clients, but I get regular work from them all. They're quite different systems that I do. I've got an advertising, sales, and production database for a publishing company that publish national magazines here in the UK. A room hire and conference facility service management system, a CRM that's specifically designed for the voluntary services sector, and a web application for the electronics manufacturing industry, and all of those are written in Zojo. I'm also currently working on a new web app for sales processing using a couple of iPads as point-of-sale terminals, which is really quite cool. Yeah, it's really quite nice. That's how I got into it, really.
That's awesome. That's sounds like a fun history of stuff you've built.
Some of it's been fun. Some of it's been painful, but some of it's been fun.
Well, you know, some projects are painful, but they're always a learning experience, right?
Sure.
So you work at home now?
I do. Yeah. I live in Stamford in Lincolnshire, which is a little out in the sticks. It's about 90 miles north of London.
Okay.
But I've got what I laughingly call my home office, which is really a desk stuffed in the corner of my bedroom, where I do a lot of my work from. But I obviously go to client sites quite a lot. But most of my development is actually done at home now instead of at client site. Yeah.
Yeah, I laugh a little bit when you say you're in the sticks because you're 90 miles away from London. But, you know, here in the U.S., 90 miles away from a major metro area, you're probably still in a suburb.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. it's a whole different scale over there.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, for us naive people here in the United States, can you describe the area that is the U.K. and what that constitutes?
Well, the UK stands for United Kingdom, and that means we actually have four different countries that join politically together to form one country with a national government. We've got England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. And so those four countries, they're separate countries in their own right, and Wales has its own national language, for example, but politically... we're all together, and physically, we're effectively joined together too. So we're not actually attached to mainland Europe. There's a sea in between. So historically, it also made a lot of sense for national defense and that sort of thing
to
actually combine together and be one country.
All right. Well, transitioning to that, you are one of the folks that helps put together the conference, the Zojo Users Group UK conference. And this year's conference, the 2014 conference, is actually this week, later this week.
It is.
And I thought you might want to talk a little bit about how that started out and what's some of the stuff that's going to go on this week.
Okay, great. Thank you. We've got a lot of great stuff this year. This is the fourth annual Zojo event in the UK that I've arranged. I started off in a city called Leicester in 2011, and we've done the last 2 years in Birmingham. We're in Birmingham again this year. It's central to the whole of England, and so it's easy to get to from around the whole country and also by air from Europe. So we choose not to use London, as many of the attendees actually live outside of London. And it's generally more expensive to hire the venue, and hotels are more expensive too. You
know? Yeah, I would think so. London strikes me as a relatively high-priced city.
Sure. So we like to hold an event in November. This means that we don't clash with XDC in May, and we don't clash with other Zojo events held in Germany by Christian Schmitz of Monkey Bread. There's also a German market for a few weeks in Birmingham in November and December. So streets in the heart of city are taken over with stalls selling German goods and trinkets and hot and cold German food and beers, Lederhosen, that sort of thing. It's a very special atmosphere. It's very good. So it's a good time of year to hold an event. We've got a great list of speakers, including Christian himself, who's been very supportive of our meetings here in the UK. Previous years have been one-day events, or perhaps a training day, and then followed by an event day. But this year we've got a two-day event. Well, it's 1.5 days, really. On the first day, we have a half-day workshop focusing on the beta release of Zojo for iOS. And I'm doing a small presentation, then we're going to collaborate and share what we know and work out what we can do. And we're all looking forward to the video chat we're going to have with you too.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to that. That will be a blast.
Yeah, we've got a great load of questions lined up for you, so that's cool. In the evening, we're going to socialize at an enormous local restaurant, which is as big as a supermarket, really. It specializes in providing many different types of food, Italian, Indian, Chinese, Thai, Japanese, and more, I think. All the food that anyone could reasonably ask for, so that's going to be great. This is likely to be followed by a trip to a bar or two for those that that feel the need. And on the second day, the Friday, we have a full day of presentations and a video chat with Jeff Perlman. We have a load of questions for him too. His questions are a bit trickier than the ones we've got lined up for you, but
I love it. Yeah, I'm great with the softball questions. So save those.
Okay. I say that's why he gets paid the big bucks. So we all look forward to that. It's a highlight of the day is to get to chat with Jeff, and Jeff has been very supportive, so it's very good. We're all looking forward to that. And we also try to make sure that we get plenty of time for networking and Q&A sessions in the day, so people can actually get help with their stuff, whatever it is, if they're stuck, if they're working on something and they just need some advice. So we like to arrange topics that there's something for everybody. We've got stuff on creating custom controls, and we've got stuff on how to secure your customers' login details. We've got a session on using Git, which is quite good. It's something that I currently don't do, but I have been told by several people that I should be doing it. Christian Schmitz is going to talk to us about using curl and also some advanced code language features, so that should be good. We have a session on using build automation and how it helps you to distribute your apps more easily. And we have stuff on some Monkey Bread plugin stuff like Chart Director and DynaPDF and using JSON. So we've got a whole load of different stuff, and we think there's going to be something for everybody, which is what we try to.
That's a good varied amount of content that should have interesting things for pretty much anybody. So you mentioned you're having a Git topic. So when you say you don't use Git, what do you use for source control right now?
Well, all of my stuff is just for me. I am a solo developer. I don't work in conjunction with anyone else looking at my code. So I currently just use the IDE, and I save off different versions as I see fit as I go through.
Oh, so you're one of those people. Okay.
I am. I'm old school, I'm afraid. But I have been... I have been shown the merits of Git on several occasions, and it's just a case of me understanding it a bit better and actually getting around to doing something about it.
Yeah, well, that is definitely something like that's worth taking advantage of. So, yeah, seeing that done hands-on at your conference ought to push you over the edge, and then next week you'll be setting everything up and being like, I can't believe that I didn't use this or something else in the past.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that sounds like it'll be a fun event. Like Eric mentioned, I am doing a little iOS type presentation at the event this week, remotely, of course. I won't be flying out there, although that would be pretty fun, I imagine. Never been over to Europe, but either way, this should be pretty exciting. So it's great to see more conferences like this. And while we're in the middle and we're talking about conferences, I will remind people about the official Zojo conference that is next year, because we do have one deadline for registration that is at the end of November. So if you are thinking about coming and want to save some money on the registration, sign up before the end of November. You save, I believe it's about $250 off the registration price. And the conference, of course, is in 2015 at the end of April, early May timeframe in Austin, Texas, and which is central to the United States. But we do get a fair amount of people also from Europe that tend to come over as well, which is always great to see. So,
yeah, some of the guys that that come to our conference every year, they've been to XTC, and yeah, they had a great time.
Yeah, it should be fun. I always love XTC. It's a kind of a full week thing for us, and it's at the end pretty darn exhausting, but it's always a blast. All right, well, you had asked me earlier, I think before we had started. You know, as I had mentioned, I had too many darn windows open, and you said, well, what size screen are you working with? And I mentioned I'm using two screens. So I'm curious, you know, you're a fellow working from home kind of guy. What do you have for a setup on your workstation, as you would?
Okay. I'm using a six-year-old MacBook Pro, which currently is only still alive because I maxed it out to – it's an old model, so I maxed it out to 8 gig of RAM, but I also whacked an SSD in there instead of its the traditional hard drive, and that's sped it up a lot. But
yeah, an SSD is by far the best way to beef up the performance of any computer. It's amazing how they can make an older computer seem pretty darn responsive and still useful.
It has definitely added at least 2 years to the life of this laptop. So I'm very loath to upgrade just for the sake of it, because it's still a great machine, and it's working very nicely. It could be a little faster, I guess, but it's not unacceptably slow for my development work. So I'm just going to keep on using it till it dies, I think. earlier this year, I got a 27-inch monitor, so I've got. I actually use the two in conjunction as well. So I've got a big screen that I've got a lot of windows open on, and I've got my laptop screen sitting physically below the large screen.
Oh, really? So you've got the laptop one's below it, the big screen's above it, and you've got them stacked vertically like that, and that works.
That's right, yeah. And that works really well for me. I don't like the thing where you've got two screens sitting next to each other, two big screens, and you're constantly moving your head left and right. It's like watching a tennis match.
That's what I do. It's very good neck exercise.
I don't like that so much, but anyway, what? since I've had the big screen, it's definitely made a big improvement to the way that I work. I was just using my laptop screen for many years, but I can now have so many different things open, things like, you know, VirtualBox for a different environment, and the amount of screen real estate you get for working in the IDE and everything's just so much better.
My main system is a Mac Pro with two screens, but I do have a MacBook Air that I use when I do have to work remotely. And, you know, it's just an 11-inch one with a tiny screen, and it is rough when I have to go work on that thing after going from, I got a 24-inch and a 17-inch screen, so not a lot, but that's pretty much the maximum that fits on my desk because I have them side by side, and that's about the width of my desk with my speakers next to them.
Is that a modern Mac Pro or an old-style Mac Pro?
It's an old-style one, the only good one, right? The modern one is neat and all, but, you know, for us old-time geeks, you know, I want to be able to open mine up, plug in a bunch of SSDs and swap things out and beef up the RAM. So, yeah, mine is about 4 years old now and still going strong. And it's very speedy. It's quad core, so it works great because I do run a lot of VMs and stuff, and it's always handy to have lots of space, RAM, and hard drive storage for all this stuff to have open at the same time. One thing I've been eyeing, though, is my displays are older, probably older than the computer. And one type of display I've started to see, because I tried a big 30-inch display many years ago. I picked one up on Craigslist for cheap. A few years ago, and I was like, all right, I can work with this. And I got a big 30-inch display. I set it up And the thing was crazy. It was like having a movie screen in front of you. I ended up using it for like a week, and I had the worst neck pain I've ever had in my life. And I ended up saying, heck with it. And I sold it, and I went back to what I had before, which made me happier. But I've seen now these new like super widescreen monitors. I don't know if you've seen these. They're like 30 inches wide, but they're not nearly as tall. So they look really, really strange. They almost look like two monitors side by side that are glued together. And I forget what the term is for them, like ultra high def or something, but they have a really wide screen, but not a really tall screen. And it looks like it could take the place of having two monitors side by side, because one downside of having them side by side is you get that gap in the middle where the, you know, the borders are. And I was like, oh, that might be kind of neat. So I keep eyeing those, seeing if I might stumble across one that's a really good bargain that I might end up swapping out, because it's always nice to have fewer cables and less things on your desk, of course. But like you, I'm sticking with my old school equipment that I've had for a while and I'm comfortable with.
Sure.
All right. Well, one thing we had you had mentioned was that you started using Zojo way back in the late 90s to make Mac shareware, which, as you mentioned, is, I don't think, a term you hear too often anymore, because almost everything is either you'd say everything these days is shareware or nothing is. I mean, because... You know,
well, I think the original idea with shareware is that you could download it and try it for free
and then pay.
That model is often gone now.
I don't know. The App Store has a lot of free stuff you download, and then they have in-app purchases to essentially unlock it, if you will. I mean, that could be considered shareware, but I guess the term is not as fancy as people like nowadays. So it tends to drop off. But how long have you been a Mac user? It always fascinates me because I relatively speaking, I'm not an old time Mac user. I've only been using Macs since early 2000s. And I always find it fascinating to hear people that have been using them even longer.
I think my Mac was something called an LC475, which was a pizza box shaped.
That's a catchy Mac name. It rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, it does, isn't it? So like a 15-inch screen or something that you stuck on the top. My older brother was using Macs a long time before I was. He had some of the original Macs, and so I started seeing them, but only using them occasionally. Way back in, must be something like 87, 88, something like that. But I was only really using them myself personally from around, I guess it must have been about somewhere around 1990. I don't remember exactly when it was. But at the time, the work that I was doing was dominated by, you know, PCs. And so Macs were very uncommon in the workplace back then. So.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely true. Do you use Windows a lot nowadays for your consulting type work?
My applications have to be typically run on Mac and Windows. I started off doing work for some clients that had Macs, but then they started to say things like, "Well, we could really have this running on our accounts PC as well." Yeah, they run some Sage software accounting that runs on the PC. Can we do that? And I was, yeah, sure, we can do that. That's okay. Interestingly, it also worked the other way around, where some of my clients that are using a PC system that I wrote, they say, our boss, our head guy, he's got an iMac at home. Can you get it to run on that too? And I'm, yeah, sure, I can do that. So I do get into Windows stuff. I'll make sure it's compatible and it runs fine. I don't necessarily design too differently from the Mac version for the Windows version. A lot of my stuff is based on centralized databases, so really it's just the interface that's a little bit different. There's nothing I have to take care of too much to do with Windows. Windows 7 and actually Windows XP is still dominating my world.
Really?
Yeah. Most of the people use Windows 7. Some of them still use Windows XP. The people that have upgraded to Windows 8 typically wish that they hadn't, but my systems still run okay for them. But I've been checking out the Windows 10 preview as well. That's quite interesting, and you know, I thank God they brought the start menu back to something reasonable. And so I do come into contact with PCs and a Windows quite a lot, but I don't specifically do much too different with the work that I do. For example, I don't do things that work with the Windows registry and that sort of thing. So,
right.
It's not necessary for the work that I do. So.
Yeah, well, I found too when you tend to build business apps, you know, a lot of the fancy UI stuff that you know people might expect, you know, at least on the OS X side, or even maybe on the Windows side, isn't quite as necessary. Business people tend to just want to be able to get their work done, and
I agree. Don't care
a lot if you know you've got the latest snazzy feature that premiered in Windows 10 or OS 10 Yosemite or whatever. They just want to be able to get their stuff done.
Yeah, for example, I don't need the Windows ribbon style interface really on anything that I do. If I've got any toolbar stuff, then the toolbar works just as well on the Mac as it does on the PC. So
yeah, I don't want to see that ribbon thing on the apps that do have it.
Sorry, say again?
I don't want to see that ribbon thing on the apps that do have it. It usually confuses the heck out of me by throwing every possible option right in your face, and you're just like, whoa. That's too much all at once. I know Microsoft had an idea for that, but it still seems to me it's just way too much stuff being presented to you all at once. I don't see how it's that much better than a menu. But
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've been playing around with the Windows 10 preview as well. I got that set up on a VM, and it is nice to see the start menu back, but for me, it never really left because I've always installed third-party start menus on my Windows 8 setups just because I found them unworkable without it. And then once you put them in, Windows 8 works perfectly fine. I think I read a news headline in the last week or so that Windows 8 combined with 8.1 might have finally eclipsed Windows XP in usage share in at least one measurement. I don't remember which, but... I think Windows 7 is still the one that right now is the most prevalent, but
it certainly is over here for sure.
Yeah, they got quite the spread coming out with those. I still haven't set up my main computer yet with the new version of OS 10, but that's only been out a month, maybe not even a month at this point. So
yeah, I used to be one of these guys that would upgrade on the first day that everything came out. And I was quite happy doing that for quite some time because, you know, then you can find out all about it and what have you. But over the last few years, I've just taken it a little easier and just seen if there's any nasty issues that, you know, a 0.1 release will take care of. And so I don't have to go through that aggro, you know. I'm not so worried about being first anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same.
The sign of old age, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we're wiser. That's what it is, Eric. We're wiser. Yeah, same with me. I mean, I remember when OS 10 Leopard came out. So that was 10.5. I think back in those days, maybe you got it on DVD, and I have this vague recollection of maybe running down to my local Apple dealer and grabbing that and installing it like the same day. But now I've waited many, many months before upgrading my OS X stuff, at least on my main computer, my MacBook Air, that is kind of my second computer that's not used as heavily. I'll usually update that even with the betas to test things out. But now also because virtual machines are so darn easy to get up and running and all the operating systems work in them, I'll often just set something up in there to play with without risking messing up my main setup. And it's way more convenient than trying to do a dual boot or something like that.
Oh, sure. Did you ever do anything with the original public beta of OS X?
The original one? No, that's before my time. I mean, I was never a Mac guy. And I used Windows And I was never a Mac guy. I kind of thumbed my nose at them because I thought the old operating system was kind of creaky. I'll use that word. And I had a friend that worked at a university, and he came by with his PowerBook, I guess it was, and was showing me this OS X thing. And I think he was running the public beta, and it was Unix. And I was impressed with Unix, and I had used that quite a bit. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I need to keep an eye on that. But I never saw the – I never played with the original public beta or anything like that. All I did when after I saw his computer is I actually end up – you know, back when you did this, I went to the bookstore and bought a book on OS X so I could read about it and see what this was all about. And then I liked it enough that months later, when Apple actually shipped a Mac that had OS X on it, I bought my first Mac. And so I've only ever used a Mac with OS X. I remember at the time I bought the Mac and it booted up into OS 9. And then I went to the internet because I didn't know how to use OS 9 and figured out how to turn that off so it would boot into OS 10. And then I only ever used OS 10. So I was using, I did use OS 10. It was 10.0 something. I don't remember which one, but.
It was very odd to start off with. The Apple menu that has always been in the top left-hand corner of the screen, they started off trying to put it in the center of the screen at the top. And oh, yeah, you frown, but it's absolutely true. It was very odd, and there was a massive amount of complaints. And, you know, the very next update, it was shifted back to over to the left. And I think they were trying to centralize the menus instead of having them in the top left. It was all very odd.
Well, they were probably testing out a lot of ideas and seeing what sticks. Well, that's funny. Yeah, I kind of glad I didn't have to necessarily see that whole transition. I just kind of jumped on board. I do remember when I jumped on board with OS X, I do remember reading at the time lots of people complaining about how slow it was.
Yes.
And but, you know, I had switched over at this point from Windows NT, which was no speed king. So I never really noticed that OS X was all that slow, really. I mean, it felt equivalent to Windows NT. So I was just like, what are you talking about? But I guess OS 9 was speedy. I don't know. Go figure. All right. Well, that's funny. I'm just going through my little notes here, making sure we're chatting about stuff that we had talked about earlier. Well, speaking about Microsoft type stuff, we had talked a little bit last week when we were testing out connections and whatnot about Microsoft announcing that their Office suite is now free on, I guess, is it just the Apple mobile devices or is it all mobile devices? Were they
as far as I'm aware, it's only the iPad. I don't know. Is it iPhone as well?
Yeah. You know, I think it's iPhone and the iPad, but they don't make an Android version of Office, do they?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I'm not aware of one either.
But I think they've just brought out a version of Office that allows users to save to the device, even if you don't have an Office 365 subscription.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
They started off saying, oh, yeah, it's free, but you've got to have an Office 365 subscription. But now I think it's free, and you don't have to have the subscription. I think they disable some features. And some features are only unlocked when you have the Office 365 subscription. But I think this is a very welcome thing, and quite a surprise and quite a change from Microsoft giving stuff away for free. Doesn't exactly sound like the Microsoft way.
Yeah, that's definitely a different MO for Microsoft to be going down that path. I just wonder if it matters a lot at this point. I mean, I used to use Office all the time back, obviously, when I used Windows more. But nowadays, I do have Office on my Mac, and I use it for just one thing, and that's to open up the summary files that are generated by the webinars that I do to calculate attendance stats and some other things. And it's just Excel seems to better parse up these files because they're just, I think they're comma or tab delimited or something like that. And Excel seems to do that better than like Numbers or Google Docs does, which is what I'd normally use for everything else is Numbers or Google Docs.
Yeah, I use Excel and Word much more than I use Numbers and Pages. numbers and pages I just dabble with every now and again, but usually it's the Office suite that I use. I don't use Outlook for email. I much prefer Apple Mail. I used Entourage for a while, but when I used to do a lot of Mac support work, if you found out quite quickly that when an Entourage database broke, it broke big time. And, you know, if you hadn't backed it up, you could lose the lot. It was horrific, really.
Yeah, I think I remember that. My wife used to run that. It kept all the email in that single database file, right?
Yeah, it did. And so if it broke, which wasn't always obvious for a while, it could be a bit broken for a while, and you could still use your email. But when it broke, it was horrific. So I've steered away from that side for email. But I don't use PowerPoint. I much prefer to use Keynote, which is superb, really. But I think having a version of Office for iPad that has the look and feel of the typical Office suite that you can see on a PC, and I think coming more and more onto the Mac, I think that's going to be quite big, really.
Yeah, my wife was pretty excited. She's a school teacher, and was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." But they do mostly use Macs at the school, but you know, some of them have used Office stuff for quite a while, so they're still more familiar with it. But the funniest thing is my daughter, who's in middle school, so that's be grade 7 here in the United States, I guess. I don't know how that would
work. I'm not familiar with all the different things. So
yeah, that's
how old is she?
She is 13.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not high school, but not the elementary first years of school. So it's kind of the in between, they call it middle school around here. But I remember she came home from school, and the state here provides all the students with iPads. And I remember She asking me if she could get Word. "Can I get Word on the iPad, Dad?" I'm like, "Word? Why do you even know what Word is? Why are you asking me this?" And apparently the kids at school are fond of Word because of its incredible amount of font selection that it has, and they like to make these documents that have, you know, insane font type things, I guess. And apparently Word, I guess, is good at this. I don't know. And they're asking about getting Microsoft Word because of this. I'm like, really? So now Microsoft Word is the cool hip thing with the kids because it does fonts. That was kind of funny. But
we've got a thing over here that a lot of our kids have to do and submit their homework online, which has just been growing and growing over the last number of years. So my older son, Nicholas, he he's got to log on, and he logs on, and he does his maths homework online and all that sort of thing, and saves on paperwork and pens and paper and all that sort of thing. But that's just the way that it's all going.
Yeah, definitely. And my daughter does a large amount of homework that's solely on the iPad, even like math problems. So they just like draw on the iPad screen as if you were writing with a pencil and write your math equations down and do it all there. And it all just gets saved, and that gets submitted back to the teacher, who I guess also reviews it online. And yeah, you don't have these reams of paper. You know, when she asks for help, I usually, whip out, I got to dig around the house to find a piece of paper first, but then I'll, get a piece of paper and my pencil, and I can scratch this stuff out. But she's just, writing with her finger on the iPad screen. Like, oh, that's cool.
That sounds very cool.
There's one question here in our little Q&A board from, this is why I try to only pronounce people's first names, but this first name might be a bit of a challenge for me. It's Adesian, and is asking, if he creates an app on Windows 7, does it mean it cannot work on Windows 8? And I think we can both unequivocally say, doesn't really matter. You can create an app on Windows XP and it will work on Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1. And in our early tests, it appears to work just fine on Windows 10 as well. Yeah. That is one really nice thing about Microsoft and Windows, is their compatibility between versions is really, really high, much more so than Apple's. So yeah, even if you made an app solely for Windows XP 10 years ago, odds are you'd still be able to fire that app up and run it on Windows 10 without any trouble. Which is one of the reasons why people don't tend to upgrade Windows as often. So there's a flip side to that. Apple makes people upgrade because their old stuff just stops working and they have to upgrade. And Microsoft, I think Microsoft, because they have so many business users, they really can't do that. They'd have a mutiny on their hands.
Yeah, sure.
All right, well, let's look at the time here. All right, yeah, well, we've probably been chatting on for a while here. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up, Eric, about your conference or anything like that before we wrap up this month?
I think we've covered it mainly. It's actually on Thursday and Friday. So for your listeners, it's a very short time. There are still places available if anybody wants to enroll.
Yeah, that's true. It is a short time.
We had one guy register today, which is quite nice. A little surprising, sort of late in the day, but these things happen. There was something I wanted to ask you about XDC, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Oh, why did you guys decide to move away from Vegas to Austin? Wasn't there enough to do at night?
Well, the feedback from Vegas is just that it was a bit overwhelming. Conference is not, 10,000 people. So you go into Vegas and you can get overwhelmed in the giant hotels and the giant rooms and the giant casinos. And it was hard to bump into people and do the networking because you could get lost in a Vegas casino and not see another person at XDC that you knew in a couple hours, unless you specifically planned a meetup place and time. So it didn't have the little homey Zojo community feel that we really like. Vegas itself is fun and all. It's also a little farther for some people to get to. So we decided to go back to a more central area and try out Austin again. And we used to do our conferences in Austin longer. I don't remember how many years ago, but some years ago. And these are at a different venue than the ones we did in the past, which is nice. I haven't personally seen it, but I'm told it's on a river, which I guess would probably be the only river in Austin. I always pictured, that area of the country being rather dry and not having a lot of bodies of water. But apparently this is on a river, which will be interesting. Me being in the Northeast, which is wet, I'm used to seeing large bodies of water all the time, but it should be pretty fun. We got a nice sized hotel. It'll fit the conference really well. And we're all looking forward to it. Right now we're in the process of reviewing the sessions. The session schedule should be published soon, within the next week or so, I'm going to guess. And of course we get the discount that runs out at the end of the month. And we do know people want to see the session schedule often before they want to register. So we want to get that out before the discount runs out so that you can read the session and go, oh my God, I need to see these sessions. I have to book now. And of course, we did sell out last year. So
yeah,
you don't want to dawdle and run the risk of us not having any space, because these things, from what I understand, can be pretty complicated to plan. I'm sure you're pretty familiar with that as well. And
yeah, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that goes on. People say yes and then they say no. And
well, I'm just surprised you're sitting here talking with me and you look so calm and relaxed, and you get a conference coming in a couple of days, and I'd probably be a complete basket case a few days before ours. But
No, actually this year we got it all organized pretty well earlier than we normally do, and all the arrangements have gone very well. We've had a couple of things that we've had to change as we've gone along, but it's all in place. What I would say about any Zojo event or any developer event is it's fascinating to see what other people are doing. When you're just in your own little world and that's all you know, sometimes you've got to spread your wings a bit and go and see what other people are doing. And everyone's doing something different, from conference systems to like award-winning apps to manage photography businesses, or through apps to operate secure door access control systems, to software to control hardware in the music industry, where the speed of functionality is critical down to a number of microseconds. I've seen all these things at the Zojo conferences, and it's fascinating. One guy a couple couple of years back, his database that he had to access was terabytes in size, not just, you know, a few thousand or hundreds of thousand records. It was terabytes. And he wanted to know how to get some performance tuning going in Real Studio at the time and everything in order to access the database quicker. So everybody's problem is completely different from everyone else's problem. And it's absolutely fascinating to see what people do.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, and I see lots of people's stuff, obviously, but at every conference I get, you know, a bunch of people showing me stuff they're building, and it's just always amazing to see this, the variety. And I mean, that's the thing with software. It's infinite. You can create an infinite number of things with it, and everyone at the conference kind of creates their own thing, and it's not something you would ever thought of or even how. And they probably did it in a different way than you would have if you were doing it. So it's definitely a grand learning amount.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Eric, for participating in just the third Zojo podcast. But this is hopefully going to become a big thing. And right now we're continuing to do them monthly. So we'll do our next one in December. And after the first of the year, who knows? Maybe these will happen more often.
Well, thank you for the chat. I've really enjoyed it. I now know how to get hold of you by video chat. So I'm not sure you thought that through. But it's been fun. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. That's a perk of any of my guests. So,
do I now get to choose who comes on next?
Oh, I should think of that. It'll be a little tag team kind of thing. I'll have to ponder that.
Well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you, Eric.